Hi there, welcome to the Neurodivergent Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Griffith, and I am so excited to have you here. On this podcast, we talk about all forms of neurodivergence, from ADHD to learning disorders to giftedness to autism and more. If any of that sounds familiar, welcome to Neurodivergent Magic. Hello, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, and welcome back to another episode of the Neurodivergent Magic Podcast, and welcome to the 100th episode. You guys, I'm so excited. This is literally such a big deal for me. I often struggle with consistency, so for me to do something long enough for there to be a 100th version of it, that's pretty great. So I'm very proud of myself, but I'm also just so excited for all of you, or happy to have all of you listening. I'm really honored, honestly. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And as a super special 100th episode thing, I actually did a completely free community coaching call the other day. And I recorded it. And now you all get to listen to these amazing people get coaching on their neurodivergent problems, issues, struggles, and get some solutions and some answers and some guidance from me. So that is what this episode is going to be. Go and enjoy. As a little bonus, I decided to give everybody on the call a 10% discount to the Neurodivergent Magic Program. And as listeners of the podcast, you get that discount too, because you're listening to it and you can hear the discount code. So the code is community at checkout, and I'll go ahead and put that link to join in the show notes. So without any further ado, enjoy the 100th episode. Hello, everybody. Hi, hi, hi. Let's see. Question for people who know how to use Zoom, which I should really know how to do at this point in time. I am attempting, hi Tori. So I accidentally hit the pop out button for the chat and I want it to go back in. I want it to be like part of the thing. And I don't know how to do that. It's bugging me.
Are you full screen?
Yeah.
I think you can do it if it's not in full screen. I'm not in full screen. I press the button that says chat and now it's on the side.
Integrated in the side, but if you click up towards the top, there's a thing you can click that says like pop out, and I accidentally hit that the other day and now I can't get it to pop back in.
Oh, I see. It says X close and pop out. Yeah, so now it's popping out. Okay. Wow, totally. I guess I'm also stuck.
I'll Google it and I'll email it out to you guys if I figure it out.
Yeah. Goodness. Because now I just did what you did and that's all I know.
Oh my goodness. Well, hi everybody. Why don't we kick off the chat by I always ask did you fix it?
The three dots on the bottom next to the smiley face.
Oh.
Merge to meeting window. Oh, there we go.
Oh my goodness. You are literally the best person. That was bugging the crap out of me. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm so happy now. I am not tech literate. Okay. So I feel like I always ask where people are from. So this time we're going to ask, I don't ask people's favorites because a lot of neurodivergent people struggle to pick a favorite and that seems silly. Why don't we choose, tell me, I don't want to put too much emphasis on work because, you know, I do not dream of labor and all that stuff, but like, what do you do? Tell me what you do. And if you're a student or if you're on disability, whatever that looks like, everything is welcome here. I'm just curious. Let's see, we have Allie, Lydia, Sarah, Kari, Tori, Lori, Linda, Kirsten. I'm sorry, I will get it right, Kirsten. Trisha and Susan, awesome. QC analyst in virology. Ooh, wow, that sounds very important. That's awesome. That's super awesome. You guys know what I do. I'm a life coach. This is what I do. but, you know, just to throw myself out there as well, content creator, life coach, all that. I was in the Navy, but I dream of being a script writer because I love writing dialogue and I love video games. Oh, Tori, that would be bomb. That would be awesome. Touring musician, fiddle mostly. Ooh, Allie, that is amazing. I love the fiddle. I took my husband to see Celtic Woman a couple years back and like, whoo, so awesome. Literally so awesome. That's so great. Okay, well, it's 3:33. We should go ahead and get started. It's recording, so that's good. As a warning or just heads up to you guys, this is recorded and I'm going to put it up as the 100th episode of the Neurodivergent Magic podcast. So if there's something that you like maybe have some questions about, but you're nervous about having it recorded for like people to listen to later, you can always DM me over on Instagram and we can talk about it there if you'd rather. But here, let me put my Instagram in the comments because it's different than my TikTok. So it depends on how y'all found me and everything. So anyway, at neurodivergent_magic, you can DM me on Instagram. But if you're ready to get coached here and now, which I assume most of you are because you knew the deal when you clicked the Zoom link. Let's see. Ooh, I'm a former special education teacher turned academic coach and curriculum writer, but still trying to land my full-time role. That is awesome. I love that you have that background in educating people who are, you know, neurodivergent or have disabilities, and now you're writing the curriculum. I think that that is a perspective we need in curriculum writing for sure. So hooray. love that. So yeah, if you would like to get coached, here's how we're going to do this, just to keep it organized. Go to reactions down on the bottom and click raise hand. And we'll just go from there. You can get coached on just about anything. So just as a reminder, I'm a neurodivergent life coach. So we can talk about what life coaching is if you guys want, but it's basically a peer-to-peer experience where I use my lived experience to help guide you through yours, basically. So definitely not therapy, not a mental health professional, not claiming to be therapy, nothing like that. And I really specialize in autism and ADHD because those are the things that I have. So I have the most lived experience on those things, but I also have depression. It's just in remission right now, which is great. But I do have experience there and I'm happy to talk about it. We can talk medication if you want, but mostly I'm qualified to talk about like stigma rather than like, what should I take? Because, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. What else can we talk about? I will say if you're dealing with like, this is kind of heavy, but if you're dealing with unaliving thoughts and you need someone to talk to, I would rather you come talk to us and have it be kind of heavy for a little bit than have you struggle alone. So that's welcome here as long as we keep things from being graphic. You know, we don't want to go that road if we can help it. So yeah, go ahead and raise hands whenever you guys are ready. Okay. Excuse me. All right, Tori, go for it. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay. Can you hear me right?
Yes.
Cool. Just recently, my boyfriend and I got into a bit of a tiff, and he is neurodivergent, as in he's got depression and anxiety, as so do I. But the problem is I am a little more impatient, triggery, kind of. I'm more angry.
Okay.
So what happened was I kind of lost my patience with him and I just kind of snapped at him and he kind of withdrew in on himself. And afterwards I just felt really, really bad. So is there any advice to help me just be more patient with him?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing I think we should talk about is something called rupture and repair. I don't know if you've heard of that like dynamic before, but basically there's this idea that all healthy relationships rupture. All healthy relationships have fights, disagreements, things where one person messed up, both people messed up, or no one messed up. And it's just hard. You know, these ruptures exist, and to try to create a relationship without them is to try to suppress yourself or your partner. And that's never the goal. So instead, what we want to do is acknowledge the ruptures and then move on to repairing them. So you lost your temper with your boyfriend, and it sucks, and you feel bad, and it's not a fun situation. But what makes the situation worse for him is if that rupture occurs and then there's no repair afterwards. There's just like, well, that was awkward, and let's just pretend it didn't happen. We don't want to go that route. So my first piece of advice would be really focus on that repair, where you come to him and maybe explain what was going on in your head, not as an excuse, but as an explanation, and make sure that your explanation and your apology are not intermingled. They are separate. That way it's not an excuse, right? You can say, hey, here's the explanation. And also, here's the independent apology that has nothing to do with why I did what I did, because regardless of why I did it, I'm still sorry. You know, that's really important, I think, to separate the two. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Then when it comes to like just generally being more patient, this is so hard. So I super sympathize with you. I think one thing that has helped me be a little more patient, especially with my kiddo. I don't always lose my temper with my husband, but I lose my temper with my kids sometimes, and I'm working on that. And I think, one thing that helps me is singing. So like nothing quite disrupts rage the way that music does, you know, like a lot of times, I guess music can encourage it sometimes, but like, I will start singing the way that I'm feeling, and it's amazing how quickly that rage starts to dissipate. Like, I will just be singing to my 3-year-old, like, you won't put your shoes on, and I am so frustrated. Why are you doing this to your mom? And then I'll have to sing, you know, like, you're not doing this to me, you're just being 3. You know? And it might sound really, you should talk to your boyfriend about this before you do it, because he might see it as like you mocking him or something. And that's not what's happening.
Right.
So talk to him about it first and be like, hey, can I try this? Like, if I start to feel my irritation levels rising, can I try dissipating it through like song, or will that make things worse for you? And just get his feedback and see how he feels. But that's a big thing that I do. Another thing that I got from Parks and Recreation is if I'm really furious, I will count backwards from 1,000 by 7s. I usually get to somewhere in the 700s before I get bored and I feel better. So that really, it forces, so often when we experience a big emotion, we think the solution is not feeling it anymore. So it's like the absence of something, but really what we often need is the presence of something more stimulating.
Okay.
That makes sense. So you need something that's different than your rage or whatever you would call it, impatience. I'm an angry person, so I call it rage. but you need something different for your brain to like hook into.
Right. I used to be a big rageaholic back in the day. And like, because like I said, I was in the Navy, and like a lot of people would be screaming, yelling. And if you didn't scream and yell back, you would just get stomped on. So yeah, it's like, there was a lot of rage, and I came out with a lot of rage, and my boyfriend was patient with me. So I'm trying to be patient with him. And there was just a lot of leftover emotion that I just didn't, that just kind of didn't go well. So
yeah.
I definitely feel that, where it's like, go, and you know what they say, music calms the savage beast. So I will definitely try that. I'll give that a run. So absolutely, thank you.
Yeah, of course. Is there anything else I can do for you right now?
Actually, there was one other question. Mm-hmm. I actually have an all or nothing kind of mentality. The biggest story I have with that was that we were visiting my parents, well, my father, and like one of my dogs like jumped up and knocked out a plate of food out of my boyfriend's hand. Mm-hmm. Now, my boyfriend has not eaten all day, and this food just got knocked down to the floor. And my boyfriend, having a sensitive stomach, can't eat a lot of things. And this one thing he now cannot eat. And I had this all or nothing mentality that I just snapped and said, oh shit, we got to go get you food right now, right now. Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. And he was like, no, calm down. Just settle down, sit down, calm down. You'll be fine. But I was like, no, we got to go. We got to get you food. And he was just like, no, you need to sit down. You're hyperventilating. You're stressing out. And it took me like a good hour just to settle down and calm down before we actually got cookout where he can get a burger. So yeah, all or nothing mentality. What's your take?
So to me, this sounds like definitely some all or nothing thinking, but it also sounds a little bit like trying to control things for other people in order to keep them safe. Like it's your job to keep everyone safe and healthy and happy all the time. And if anything goes wrong, it's on you to fix it. You go into like fix it mode. And if there's not an obvious solution right away in the black or white thinking, then it leads to like some panic because it's like, well, they're going to be unhappy. And if they're unhappy, then this could happen or this could happen or this could happen. It sort of sounds to me like, especially having been in the Navy, like there were probably situations where if things were not taken care of right away, there could be very drastic like consequences.
Absolutely. And
I think that's maybe carrying over into your relationship where you feel like there could be drastic consequences if he goes hungry or if he's upset with you potentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no. I was just thinking like that definitely makes a lot of sense.
The biggest thing for me that has helped with that, because I deal with a lot of that trying to control other people's emotions by doing the right thing or saying the right thing or being the right way. The biggest thing that's helped me is something from Katie Byron. She's a spiritual life coach, I think. I don't know her super directly. I actually heard about this from someone else who knew her, but she says that there are three types of business in the world. There's your business, other people's business, and God or the universe's business. And the only thing you actually have control over is yours. Everything else you've got to learn to let go of. And when you're in a high control group like the military, like that is not the vibe that is there, you know, like, oh, let it go. Like that's not the vibe, I don't think. But that is kind of the truth. Like we can control others to a certain extent, but do we really want to? And it's usually a lot healthier for us if we just really focus on like, what can I control about me and how can I control myself right now?
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Of course. I'm happy to help.
Cool. Thank you. And that's all I've got. So I'll roll over my hand now. Thank you.
Okay. let's go ahead and go on to Sarah.
Hi. I'm not ready.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. Sarah Ostroff has her hand or their hand raised. Oh,
there's a short O. That's people's main like dispute. Anyway, I have like emails to deal with, I guess.
Yeah.
So basically it's been a long few weeks. I am done with grad school, but not because I finished everything.
Mm-hmm.
I completed everything in the marriage and family therapy program except for practicum, which I'm not good at because I've already lost three, and we finally confirmed that like this isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting a different degree in culture and family studies, mm-hmm. which is about half the MFT classes plus a capstone, which I'm not having because the way they explained it was I've already done more, like way more credit wise than that capstone. So I'm done with school and I will have a master's degree in July.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess. In any case, like, so I've still been in exchange with my advisor who I talked to a couple weeks ago. After the first meeting. She mentioned in the follow-up email that she was going to contact the dean to talk about like getting money back for the practicum class I was supposed to be in this semester. That may have been on the 7th or the 15th, but so I know on Monday I got an email saying that I had like an unpaid balance,
okay,
which was, you know, for this semester's practicum that I'm not in. And I knew that I had to get like a refund on it. So maybe I'm not getting that because we didn't pay at the start of the semester. But like, I don't know, this is too much of a web of people that I don't know who or how I'm supposed to get in touch with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Navigating this kind of like bureaucracy is so annoying and so frustrating. So what I would do is whoever told you, hey, you're going to be getting a refund on this because of this, I would find that email if you can, and either screenshot it, print it out, whatever you have to do, and bring it to the bursar and be like, hey, this is my name, this is my accounts, these are the classes I'm in, and this is the email I have. How can you help me? And just have them direct you from there.
Right.
That would probably be the direction I would go.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So on February 9th, my advisor said, I've communicated with the dean, who is aware of your question regarding a refund for the practicum course.
Okay.
That was February 9th.
Perfect. Yeah. So that's not crazy long ago. I think that's within enough time that they will still honor it, but not so soon that they're like, well, we just haven't had a chance to do it yet.
Right. I also didn't get a chance to talk to the dean directly. The late payment fee notification was yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. I would screenshot both of those and bring them to the bursar and be like, hey, I just need to know what's going on here. I shouldn't owe you money. In fact, I think you owe me money.
What is a bursar? I mean, like
Oh, no, it's okay. You're totally fine. If you're on campus, there is a building for the bursar's office that you should be able to find on a campus map, or you can always email your advisor and be like, hey, I'm having some trouble with this. Like, can you sort it out or should I go to the bursar directly? And if they say, oh, sure, go to the bursar, just ask them for directions, or, you know, bursar right. Just means head of money and financial aid and whatnot.
Right, right. Naturally, anybody who likes Hamilton is aware of that fact. But
that's true.
I mean, that was my first reaction when I asked that question. But yeah. So I didn't get an email from that. I got an email from student accounts.
Okay, that's probably through the bursar, though, I would
assume. Dear student. Thank you. Yeah, it is signed, thank you, student accounts.
Yeah, that's very
so odd. Like just not a name attached to it. And I called yesterday and left a voicemail.
Okay. Yeah, calling can work, especially if you're not on campus, but if you are, you'll probably get it resolved faster if you go in person.
I see. That's true. I guess campus is like still active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because other people are in their classes that have been like combined, I guess, but okay. Yeah. So I could go to campus.
Yeah. Does that feel manageable or does that feel like, okay, I know that's what I should do, but I'm not going to do it.
Right. I'm open to it. Like, I don't know how much it would help. I would have to go to the front desk mm-hmm. and say that I need financial help. Like, I don't know if I should look on the website if there is someone designated as a bursar, because again, like I can't say I'm here to talk to student accounts or whoever runs this email that did not sign it. And it may be, now that I think of it, the email may have been automated. I don't know.
I'm sure it was. Yeah. It was probably just like, oh, these are the list of people who haven't paid. Let's just send it all through our automated system. And
yeah. And like, there's a phone number. I already called that. So I guess that makes sense. It's certainly a lot to deal with, having been recently like very demoralized.
Yeah. I think one of the things that helps me when I have to go somewhere that feels overwhelming is I give myself a window where it's like, instead of saying I have to go at this time on this day, I say like, okay, I have to go at some point in the next 3 days. Like I do this with grocery shopping a lot because I hate it. And like the other day, Monday night, I was like, you have to go grocery shopping tonight. We're out of groceries. Like you need to go. And all that pressure just made it like, I was dreading it and it felt awful. And my husband was like, we'll just order food. Like, it's fine. I was like, oh, okay. And then this morning I was like, you know what? Right now feels pretty okay. Like, I think I could handle this. And so I just went before it got to be too much pressure. I just like went right away before I could think about it too hard.
Yeah.
So that might be helpful.
That's true. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Give yourself a window and give yourself a script if that helps, or as much as you can script. And yeah, just know that they deal with a lot of confused students who are not sure what's going on with their bill like all the time. You will not be the first or the last. So there's no need to be like stressed or embarrassed about doing everything perfectly or saying exactly the right thing.
Yeah. But I mean, like it is uncommon because like most people don't start in classes and then have to end them because they cannot, specifically because they cannot manage a practicum class.
It's actually more common than you might think. You're definitely not alone. I know it might feel lonely because you might be the only person in your cohort who this has been, you know, the experience, but you would be surprised at the number of people who grad school is hard for lots of reasons and lots of ways. And if you can do all the things required, that's great. And if you can't, personally, I don't think there's any shame in that.
Yeah. And I think that answers my question.
Okay. Yeah. If you need anything else, just let me know. Okay. Let's go to Allie Crawl. Crawl? I'm not sure. Cry.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Crawl.
Crawl. Okay. I got it right the first time, of course.
I am, let's see, I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was a young teenager and I'm 40 now, but I feel like I am just now learning all of the effects of it. I feel like when I got like the initial like brochure, I was just told, oh, you're going to be different. And I was like, okay, cool. But I didn't really understand everything. And so now I'm trying to learn like just what like dopamine has to do with everything and executive functioning and like, how can I get dopamine in a way when I'm just like, I'm so severely addicted to sugar, I think, from this whole thing and trying to get a little bit of dopamine. And then I just like, it wears off. And then I'm just even more tired because I had sugar. And there's just like this lack of me getting anything done because of it all. It's all tying together for me, I guess. And so I'm wondering if you have any hints for just executive functioning in general, and then how to a healthy way of getting dopamine. I don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. So first I want you to know you are so not alone. I have my packet of cookies here, keeping me company all day. So not alone. okay. So the first thing I want to start with is there is no such thing as bad food. That takes us down a really unhelpful road when we start labeling foods as good or bad. Instead, I like to think of it as like helpful food or unhelpful food, right? Like what foods help me function better and what foods actually, you know, they help me in a certain sense, but they disrupt me in other senses. Because here's the thing, like a lot of us, we get a lot of shame for emotional eating or dopamine seeking or whatever. But the truth is like, our brains need dopamine in such a desperate way that it makes sense that we're willing to do almost anything to get it. Like, I don't care if this is bad for me. I don't care if I'm going to crash later because right now I'm in excruciating mental pain, you know? So I don't want you to hold any shame for the sugar. Okay. Like let all that shame go. It is a very natural part of ADHD, very natural part of the way our society talks about food. Like it's, you're all good. The next thing is let's talk about how dopamine works. So I'm not a scientist. I don't know all of it exactly, but the general gist is this. Most neurotypical people, when they have a task, their brain gives them like a little tiny dopamine snack at the beginning to be like, if you start this, you'll get more dopamine at the end. And it's like, okay, dopamine, thanks. I'll follow you right now. And we go down the little dopamine path and we get stuff done. ADHDers does not work like that. We don't get the little snack at the beginning. And sometimes we don't even get the reward at the end. You know, if we're not interested in what we're doing, our brain often will not give you the dopamine at the end, even after you complete the task, which just leads to demoralization and makes us feel so crappy about like I did all that work and I don't even feel better. Like what, what was the point? So that's sort of, in short, a very, very oversimplified version of how dopamine works with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the opposite can happen where we get stuck chasing the dopamine and we get almost like dopamine overload. This often comes from things like social media or even from like new relationships and stuff sometimes can like flood us with dopamine. And then when it stops, we feel an intense withdrawal and it's like, oh, where'd it go? I need more. Sometimes this leads us to break up with people because they're no longer giving us the dopamine, which, you know, we think that the problem is the relationship, but really it's just like the infatuation stage has sort of started to wear off, which is very normal and healthy. But in our heads, it doesn't feel healthy. You know, it feels really bad. Or with social media, it can lead to using it a lot. I am so guilty of this. I am on my phone all the time, every day, all day. I'm really working on it, but it's hard. It's hard to break. Because it is, it's like the dopamine slot machine. It's like every time you swipe, you get a whole new thing, especially TikTok. Like, it's like you get one time you're getting an explanation on baby elephants and then you swipe and you're getting an explanation on executive dysfunction and then you swipe and you're getting a beautiful makeup tutorial. Like, it's just like, ding, 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 ding. And that feels good, but is often kind of bad for us in the same way that like sugar is not always super helpful because it tends to lead to a crash. So when it comes to executive functioning and dopamine and whatnot, you're like, okay, so I don't get the snack at the beginning. I don't always get the reward at the end. Like, how am I supposed to get anything done and feel decent about it? So I was going to save this until the end, but this seems like a really good way to like slide it in there. But I actually have a program that's all about this.
Nice.
So I have a program specifically for executive dysfunction. It's specifically to help people with this kind of thing. And it's not just task initiation issues, although that is like the majority of what we focus on. We also talk about emotional dysregulation and impulse control, and we talk about working memory, but personally, I don't know a lot of ways to improve that yet. I need to do more research on that. But we talk about all of the different types of executive dysfunction and what to do and how to really get shit done. The goal is in 24 hours. Doesn't always happen, but that is sort of the goal that we set forth with the program, is like, by the time you watch all the modules and get some coaching, like, the time frame it takes you to do stuff is going to gradually shrink and hopefully get to the point where you can do it in like a day. That's the goal of the program anyway. And it's basically designed with three parts, and that is emotional intelligence, practical tools, and community. Because I think a lot of ADHDers, we get told like, oh, just put it on your calendar, just use this planner, just all these practical tools that are helpful, but without the emotional intelligence to implement them in a consistent and sustainable way, they don't serve us. But at the same time, there's also coaches who are out there like preaching self-love, which of course I'm on board with, but then they don't provide any practical tools. And it's like, well, I can't self-love my way into doing the laundry. I think this isn't going to work. So I really try to combine both. And then I also add in the community aspect because I think everything is easier with a friend. So that's the program. It's lifetime access. You join once and then you get access as long as the program exists. There are, I think, 9 video modules that you watch at your own pace. And if you're thinking, I'll never watch those, there's Monday night coaching, where Monday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we meet up. And that can be like your little accountability group. You can be like, okay, Megan, I'm going to watch module 3. And if I haven't watched it by next Monday, you got to ream me out. And I'm like, I will try. So accountability is kind of baked in because I know a lot of ADHDers, we struggle. So there's that. Oh, the price. I never want you guys to go in blind. The cost is $997 for, like I said, lifetime access, which is kind of bonkers, but that's what I want to price it at. And there's payment plans available as well. So 3 months for $335 each time, or 6 months for $170 each time. So that's my little ad. but I will also give you like practical tips to use right now. So obviously I want you to join the program. I think the program's great. We have about 16 people in there right now. We have an average of 3 people who pop on Monday nights usually. It's sort of a rotating cast, whoever's available. And it's a really, really powerful program. I've seen a lot of people get a lot out of it. So there's that. But if you're like, okay, that sounds great, I need some tips right now. My biggest tip is gamification. My biggest practical tip is gamification. You want to turn it into a game if you can, which can sometimes make us feel like little kids, which is frustrating because we do this with kids a lot, but honestly, it works. So who cares? One way that I turn things into a game is I'm big into Dungeons and Dragons. So I will write down 20 things that need done, all of like relatively equal dislikability. Like sometimes I throw in one thing I want to do. And so I'm like, ooh, come on, get an 8. And then I roll my 20 sided dice and I have to do whatever it lands on. Now, this is the thing. So I don't know if any of you guys have kids or if, even if you don't, if you watch Bluey, but there's an episode of Bluey, which is this really cute kid show where they are playing these games that Bluey's making up and all the other kids, they're struggling to follow the rules, right? And they're like, why do we have to follow the rules, Bluey? And Bluey's like, cause I said so. And they're like, that's not a good reason. And they finally, at the end of the episode, realize that games are only fun if you follow the rules. Otherwise you're just doing whatever you want and it's not a game. Right? So if you set yourself up to do this, you've got to follow the rules. You have to do whatever it lands on. Cause if you don't, you're setting yourself up for a mess. Okay, so that's one way. Habitica, I see Kyra posting about Habitica. It's a really good app that can kind of gamify habits. So if you're looking to establish some habits, Habitica is really good for that. I've also heard good things about Finch as like a self-care app. I haven't tried that one. I have tried Habitica. It worked for me for a couple months and then it stopped working, which leads me to my emotional advice for you, which is stop shitting on yourself. Just stop beating yourself up. Stop being such a jerk to this person, this wonderful sentient ball of stardust that you are, this miracle on earth that you are beating up just because they're not doing exactly, just because they're not neurotypical. You're not going to be neurotypical. There's nothing you can do that's going to make you not ADHD, at least not right now. And we've got to find some peace with that. You know, we have to. So one way I have found peace with my ADHD is realizing that solutions only work for me for a couple of weeks or a couple of months at a time. And then I've got to find something new. My brain just gets sick of it. And instead of telling myself like, oh, you failed again, just one more thing you can't stick to, like, let's add this to the wall of terrible, or the wall of awful, as How To ADHD calls it, you know, like instead of that, it's like, oh, well, this worked for like 3 months. That's awesome. That's 3 months of my life that were way better than they would have been without it. Like, that's great. And then I move on to the next strategy.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry. Yeah. I just talked a lot. Did you have thoughts or questions?
Yeah, no, I was writing it down. Okay. I appreciate it. Yeah. I think my only last question would be, this is not on the same realms, but how do you deal with people who don't even believe in ADHD?
I laugh at them.
Awesome.
I'm genuinely very, like, I laugh at them because they're, at this point, they're being purposefully ignorant, which is why I feel comfortable looking at them. Not everyone is. A lot of people are in a situation where they weren't educated on mental health and it's not really their fault. So I try to have compassion, but in order to protect my psyche, sometimes I just have to laugh. But I also, I feel really bad. I have a lot of pity for these people because heaven forbid they become disabled in some capacity later in life and they have no love for anyone with any disability, no compassion, no openness toward a different experience. And if they find themselves on the receiving end of that, they're going to deal with a lot of shame and a lot of self-deprecation and self-hatred. And I honestly do pity them for that. And so that's kind of how I view it. I don't take them seriously at all. I don't let them take up any time in my brain.
Yeah. It was hard. My last job, I had someone that I was working with that really expected me to perform exactly like everybody else. And it was impossible for me. And so, like, now I look back at it and have so much more self-love for myself and be like, well, no wonder I didn't do that. Like, yeah. But it was just really hard in the moment dealing with somebody who's like, just, you know, insistent that I have to perform exactly the way he, you know, thought I should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, There's often a lack of, I keep saying compassion, but it really is just a lack of compassion where people think the way they experience the world is the only way to experience the world. And it's not. And you know that now. And
yeah,
it's okay if they don't know it.
Yeah.
They don't have to know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Let's go over to Lori.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a autistic person living in Scotland, and I've been struggling a lot with work recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of touching on what you kind of just spoke about, like, I've tried to disclose that I'm autistic, and I feel people kind of pause for a second. And then within a day, they're back to expecting you to Hello? Be the same as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking.
Oh, Heather, can you mute yourself for me real quick?
Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for getting back to me so quickly.
Oh, I'm going to go ahead and mute her. There we go. Okay. Sorry about that, Lori. Continue.
It seems to get forgotten really quickly. Mm-hmm. Whenever I try to bring up the fact that I am autistic and what it can mean for me, and I struggle day to day at work, and then to compound it, I share an office with another woman who obviously takes a lot of pride and worth in doing things immediately and, like, very, very, like, logically, and, you know, as soon as something hits her desk, she's on it, whereas, like, I can't work that way. Like, I need to, like, schedule stuff and give myself enough time in between, and I just feel like she constantly, whether she realizes it or not, just says or does little things that kind of points out that I'm not like that, and it kind of bothers her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I saw a really great TikTok the other day about how to deal with passive aggression. And it's basically you only respond to what they literally say, which is pretty easy for most autistic folks because it's like we're pretty literal anyway. But like if she's saying these like kind of snide things that imply that you're not as good as she is because you're not working the way she works, like don't listen to the implications, because again, we laugh at and have pity for these people because their lives could radically change one day and things could be really different for them and they're not going to have the compassion for themselves that they need. And that actually really sucks. And we don't let them hurt us. Because just because we feel bad for them doesn't mean we have to let them walk over us. So I think, how would I deal with this in a practical sense? Because in an ideal world, I would just tell her off and be like, what is wrong with you? Like, I've told you that I'm autistic. I've told you that I process things differently. I've told you this. And it seems like you have the memory of a goldfish. Like, why can't you remember that I do things differently and that it's okay? Why can't you accept it? But let's face it, that's probably not what we're actually going to do. So instead, what I might do is like, So something hits both of your desks at the same time. She picks it up and starts immediately working on it. You put a sticky note on it that says, we'll work on Thursday. And you can even say something out loud like, oh, can't wait to get to this on Thursday. And like, just verbally reminding her, yeah, I do stuff differently and I'm not gonna be ashamed of it. I'm like, almost, if she's going to be passive aggressive, like you can kind of throw that type of communication back at her if you want. If you'd rather be much more direct, that's also always an option. And you can just say, hey, can you stop making comments like that? They make me uncomfortable. It's really up to you.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of at least try and being reflective first and the passive aggressiveness. Like, I don't know how good I am at being direct, but no, I really like the first sort of strategy you mentioned. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Just only respond to what she says. Do not let her implications get at you. And also, like, gently remind yourself, like, even if you have to excuse yourself to go to the bathroom and just like look in the mirror and be like, I am autistic and that is a good thing. I am a good person. I am a good employee. This woman will not tear me down. I will not quit because of her. I know I'm good at my job. I just do it different. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's really good. I think I don't let myself have that time. Like, I think I do want to escape for a wee 5 minutes here and there, but mm-hmm. I always feel like no one, like, people will be like, why is she like running away? Or yeah, so I need to start allowing myself to do that.
Yeah, because like, if we're being honest, people don't know that you're leaving the situation because you're mentally like overwhelmed or anything. They could just think like, oh, maybe she, I don't know, has IBS or something. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter what they think. Like, they don't know what's going on. And that's a common thing with autistic folks. Like, we tend to think that people can sort of read our minds, or everyone thinks the way we do. A lot of us struggle with cognitive empathy, where it's like, how do I understand what other people are thinking? Like, doesn't everyone think like this? But yeah, there's no reason people would judge you for excusing yourself every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I need to try and remember that in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll get easier over time as well. The more you stand up for yourself, the more you refuse to engage in her passive aggression, the more you take moments for yourself, the easier it's going to get. I mean, yeah. As someone with IBS, people think that's weird too. That's true. People judge, but honestly, there's nothing you can do about these things. Like, being autistic is being autistic. Having IBS is having IBS. Like, you can't, I think it's dumb that people judge us for these things. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me like being overly optimistic about like, I know sometimes we sense people's judgment and that can be really hard to deal with. And I don't want to dismiss that. I have stopped giving people the emotional bandwidth of caring about that. I just don't give a shit about their opinions anymore, because frankly, they're crappy opinions. They're mean opinions. They're rooted in ignorance and hatred. And I just don't care anymore. So if you can get to that place, it's freeing.
I really want to get to that place. And I think I'm on a journey getting there, but I'm not quite, I can't quite get there just yet.
Yeah, you'll get there. You'll get there for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope.
Is there anything else I can do for you?
I guess kind of on the other side of the coin, there's a couple of people that I've brought up being autistic to at work, and it's almost the complete opposite, whereas in like it's the infantilizing, like you kind of feel that they're babying you or like being overly like sugary with you because they don't know how to act. And I feel for them because like you don't know when it's awkward and you're just trying to be nice, but at the same time, like, it's awkward for me because I know that they're not being genuine with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something I might tell them is like, hey, first of all, I'd be like, hey, can we talk about this? You know, I hope you have a work environment where it's okay to talk about these things. And then I would tell them something along the lines of like, I didn't tell you that I'm autistic so that you would treat me different. I told you I was autistic so that I could be myself. And I expect you to be able to be yourself as well. So there's no need to sugarcoat things for me. There's no need to not be yourself. Let's all just own our identities and communicate with each other as best we can.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds like, yeah, you just got to be upfront and put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You can have a conversation. I'm a big slideshow person. So honestly, I might make a slideshow like reasons I told you I was autistic. Ways I am feeling uncomfortable after coming out as autistic, how we can adjust these things moving forward.
I really like that. That's sort of like totally something I would do. Yeah, send out a little departmental email.
Yeah, I might do it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Okay, let's go ahead and go to Lydia.
Hi, so I am diagnosed with anxiety, definitely depressed right now, and possibly have ADHD. We explored it when I was a teenager and then just kind of like never came back to it. I do plan to like pursue trying to figure out if I have anxiety or ADHD or both, because I know there can be overlap with women, but I don't have insurance right now. And so like not really an option. But my big question is, I've just been going through a hard time. I mentioned, you know, I'm trying to land a full-time job, and it's been a year and a half of that. And during that time, my dad has been really ill, and he's not going to get better. Let's put it that way. So just suggestions for how to like manage my anxiety and my depression while I'm going through this hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, I just want to like reflect to you that I can like sense the amount of pain that you're both in and the amount of pain that you are like desperately trying to avoid. You know, there's very much this feeling of like everything hurts, and I swear to God, like if one more thing happens, I'm going to lose it. And yeah, so I want you to know that you're very seen here, and I hope that that's okay. I hope this is like, you feel safe enough to be seen here, but okay. So when we're going through hell, a lot of people say, oh, just like that song, like keep on moving. Maybe the devil won't notice you're there, which, you know, good song, but, I think when shit hits the fan and everything is going wrong and you can't keep up, the best thing to do is decide which balls you're juggling are made of glass and which ones are made of rubber, right? I forget who came up with that. Wasn't me, but I really love that analogy. Mm-hmm. And you got to drop everything that you can. And you may have already done this, but you got to drop everything that's possible. And The thing is, you can't drop the things that are necessary. And sometimes we drop self-care because we think it's rubber, but self-care is glass. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of self-care. So like preventative self-care, during the crisis self-care, and aftercare. All three of those are important. And we can't just do the aftercare part. That's what a lot of people do, is like, well, once I have a meltdown, I'll take care of myself. But we've got to do some of the preventative so that we have fewer meltdowns or crises or breakdowns. So I think the first thing that I usually recommend for people in similar situations is we got to figure out the money first, because money just makes everything easier, right? Which I know, you know, everyone knows this, but everything gets easier with a little bit of cash. So I think you're looking to land a full-time gig and it hasn't been working out. I'm not a career counselor, but I can totally walk you through like what I would do, I suppose. So I personally run my own business, and I think that is not the solution if you need cash right now, because it's a slow burn. But I think it's a better solution long-term. So I think if you can find something that just pays the bills and takes some of that load off, then you can start building your own if that's a direction you want to go. Because as a curriculum designer, like that's totally a direction you could go, just throwing that out there, especially someone with your specific expertise. I really could see that going well, but like I said, I'm very obsessed with business. So that's just my own special interest impeding on the conversation. Trying to find a full-time gig, I think there's all the usual stuff, like put your resume on Indeed and all of that nonsense. But I think, not that it's nonsense, it works to a certain degree, but I think another big thing is like networking, which a lot of neurodivergent people hate. you're not alone. But instead of thinking of it as networking in the sense that like, I'm going to go find someone to take advantage so I can get a hand up or a leg up or whatever. Instead of viewing it that way, I like to view networking as like, where are my people? And how can I be with my people in more meaningful ways? So like you used to be an educator. So maybe there are past teacher friends who, yeah, maybe you've fallen out of contact with, but it wouldn't be that weird if you reached out, which I know your anxiety probably lies to you about. but it really wouldn't be that strange to reach out and be like, hey, I'm looking for a full-time gig. If you hear anything, let me know. Principals tend to have connections in that way. So if you were close with your principal at all, I would totally reach out to them. Honestly, if you're looking for just anything that'll pay the bills, like, oh, goodness. There we go. Okay. if you're looking for just anything that pays the bills, and it doesn't have to be curriculum design right this second, then reaching out to any adult that you know and just being like, hey, is your company hiring? You would be shocked the number of companies who do not care about your experience. They, in fact, they want to train you in their company's image. So they don't actually want you to have too much past experience. So like, I know that's what happened with my husband. He works in health insurance and he didn't have any prior experience, but they were like, that's actually great. We want you to do things our way. so that could potentially be an option. I don't know. Is this helpful?
Yes. So I have like a really great group of people. And so that's been helpful as far as like networking stuff. It's just hard because like I haven't had much leads and stuff. So it's a whole thing. But no, I'm willing to do like kind of get a whatever job, because right now, like, yeah, I know like just getting like a steady flow of income is going to be helpful, because it's also going to help like not just my mental health, but my husband's. We're in like a crappy apartment. I need to get out. And so, yeah, I'm willing to kind of do whatever, but even trying to find like whatever positions has been hard, because I do feel like I need to get something that's like remote and flexible schedule. So then like if my parents need me, I can be there without it being like the end of the world.
No, I think that's really great. And there are more companies offering that right now than ever before. So I know it's hard, but also just like, sometimes it's helpful to remember, like, yes, this is hard. Yes, I am struggling, but also this is maybe the best time in history for me to be getting this type of job. And so like, there's that sort of mindset shift. Also, something that might help when it comes to applying to jobs. I heard this. A lot of neurodivergent people don't realize that people lie on their resumes. A lot of us are like, wait, but it's a resume. It's all about what you've done. What do you mean you lie? And people are like, yeah, well, you just lie. What? So apparently that's like, not only is it common amongst applicants, but usually employers know, like, it's like this weird unspoken rule, like that it's okay to like lie about certain things. So that's wild to me. You don't have to lie on your resume. What I will say is this though, apply for jobs that you don't meet the qualifications for. Because most jobs, when they're posting them, do not want someone who meets every single qualification, because if they do, you're overqualified and they're going to have to pay you too much. So it's okay if you're missing one or two or three things from their qualifications list, apply anyway. Is there anything else I can help you with?
No, that's helpful. It's just, yeah, just, it's been tough.
It has been. No, I understand. I really, really do. There's, yeah, there's a lot of problems with the world of employment right now.
Yeah, it's just, I never thought I'd be in this, still in this a year and a half later. So there's a little bit of shame there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just know that there are forces bigger than you at work here. This is not, a lot of people with anxiety take things very, very personal and they feel very personally responsible for the situation they're in. But you have to understand that, I don't know how to say this without going full leftist, but corporations have discovered that they can make a profit, a bigger profit than they did the year before, year after year after year, if they exploit their workers to the point of like making it impossible for new people to even get the job. So you're in a crappy position, and it's not your fault.
Yeah. And I did leave at like one of the worst times to leave the classroom because the pandemic kind of pushed a lot of teachers out. I knew I wanted to leave before, so that's like made it harder too.
Yeah.
I had to stay for like a certain amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard. It's all hard right now.
Yeah. But no, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I hope that helped. Let's go to Kirsten.
Hi.
Hi. What's up?
Hi. Thank you for doing this. This is so neat. I've learned a few things already.
Good. I'm so glad.
Okay. So my question, so I have a background of growing up in trauma and then I self-diagnosed as autistic. So I like to have things like in control or like know exactly when my husband's going to be home or like things like that. And when I don't know, I either get upset or it can cause a lot of anxiety. So I was wondering if you had any suggestions for when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I am actually the same way, especially about my husband coming home. Like, it's not even anxiety. I'm not worried he got in a car wreck. It's more just like, this is when you're supposed to be home and you're not home. Like, what's happening? So for me, what I usually do is if I can tell it's going to be that kind of a day before it hits like 5 o'clock or whatever time your husband usually gets off work, I will text my husband and be like, hey, can you just let me know when you leave work? Just feeling a little overstimulated today, or just feeling a little anxious today, or just, you know, whatever the feeling is. That way I can head it off, because if I get a text from him at like, even if it's late, at least I'll know like, okay, he's coming home now. Which is helpful, I think, for me at least. Does that sound like it would be helpful for you?
Yeah, I do that.
Okay, Okay.
Yeah. So that's good to know to keep doing it then.
As long as it works for your relationship, it works really well for mine. So, I recommend that. I also recommend, grounding your body in safety during those, like, whatever, however long it is where you're kind of in waiting mode. Because that waiting, we often just feel very unsafe. Our safe person isn't home yet, and we expected them to be home, and now we're stressed. And so grounding your body in safety, I really like to do EFT tapping. EFT stands for emotional freedom techniques. And it doesn't matter if you're more of a Chinese traditional medicine or westernized medicine, both agree that it works, just for different reasons. So it really, really helps ground your nervous system in safety. So I really love the EFT tapping. You can find examples of it on YouTube, all that good stuff. So I would just do some of that as you start to get stressed, or make sure your sensory needs are being met. That's another really big one that we sometimes forget about in our anxiety to see our partner again. We start to forget that we need to be taking care of our sensory needs. So put those noise-canceling headphones on, get under a weighted blanket, or watch something stimmy, like turn on the fireplace thing on Netflix, you know? Oh, you're cool. Muted. There you go.
That sounds, I think I'm doing a lot of those things. So I think I just need to continue and I guess know that there's no like magic solution.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you're really accommodating the autism. So what I'm thinking is that maybe some of the trauma is going unhealed and unacknowledged, which I am not a therapist, so I can't help with trauma specifically, but really doing that trauma work is going to make a big difference, I think.
Yeah, I've done a lot of the accommodation for autism. I focused like my whole year on learning about that, so I definitely could probably say yeah to that. And then the trauma is coming up, I guess. Hey,
yeah,
might be.
Something that helps me sometimes is gently reminding myself that I am here now. I'm not 15. I'm not 11. I'm not 6. I'm here now. I'm me. And this person, my husband, is not my parents. I do a lot of projecting of my parents' love onto his love, which is very unfair because they loved me very differently. So just gently reminding yourself, like, he's not holding out on me on purpose. He's not ignoring me. He's, you know, there's a lot of that, like, fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of, you know, my routine being messed up, like, and they're doing it on purpose because they hate me. And just gently reminding yourself, like, this is not my whoever was.
I think that could be a very good strategy, even with like other people too, because like, if someone else has like a behavior that I might not like understand, or like something's I can tell, you know, like that pattern recognition, you're like, this doesn't seem normal. And so like, that's a good idea to be able to like bring myself back. So yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else I can do for you?
I think that's it. Thanks. Thanks for answering my questions.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, so we have a couple people who haven't gotten coached yet. If you want to get coached, I'm more than happy to. This was going to be like an hour and a half. I have a hard stop at 5, but excuse me, we still have about 25 minutes if anyone wants to raise their hand. So I'm going to give people a minute. I'm going to go ahead and send you guys the link to check out the Neurodivergent Magic Program. Okay, so that's the link if you guys, oh, sorry, Blaine, I'm going to go ahead and mute you real quick. There we go. Okay. Just for a second, and then we will get to coaching, I promise. But that's the link to the Neurodivergent Magic Program. If anyone was interested from that description before, like I said, there's payment plans available. And actually, you know what we're going to do? Hold on. I have a fun little surprise because I just like doing this and I think it's fun. So I'm going to give you guys 10% off because I can. So I'm going to, let me see if I can find one that's already active. No, I'll just make a new coupon real quick. So give me a second. Community call coupon. So just use, oh, I guess this is going to be on the podcast. So, oh, well, we'll just give it to everybody. Everybody who listens can go ahead and get this, I suppose. Let's see. There we go. Okay. So go ahead and use code community at checkout and you can get 10% off of the program. Now, fair warning, this will only take 10% off of your first payment. So, which I don't know why, I really need to call ThriveCart and be like, what the fuck? It should take it off all of your payments if you do the payment plan. That way it's 10% off total. But for some reason, it like, I swear I check the complete funnel, all that stuff. And it, anyway, so if you do the payment plan, it'll only be 10% off your first payment, but it's still a good deal. It's still a good way to save a little extra money. So enjoy that coupon and let's get back to coaching. Okay. Blaine, go ahead and unmute now. I'm so sorry about before.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I would do it myself, but I just got off work and Brian, but I'm taking advantage of this free coaching. So like, I have urgent something about, cause I like burnout cause I'm ADHD and autistic. So, and I work a physical job and I've been at my job for like 9 years. And, but I'm currently like, cause I'm 43. So, and, so I'm dealing with like, I can't afford to like, cause I feel like my body needs like shut down and rest, but I can't, you know, afford it and all that. So, but I have FMLA, but I can take like a week, you know, at a time, whatever, cause I can, you know, make ends meet off, you know, I can miss a week, but not like, you know, like multiple like weeks or month, you know. So my question is like, you know, I need like taking a week off. Yeah, it'd be nice to like rest and all, but I'll just be back right into the, you know, my deep burnout that I'm currently experiencing. So from all the like chronic stress and like, and just like executive functioning going on, like I got major, like, you know, like, the stress triggered a lot of like, you know, my PTSD and like all my, you know, I have borderline. So all that like triggered a lot of words. Like, I just feel like just sitting at home and doing nothing, you know, so like, you know, feeling going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't lie to you. The best cure for burnout is to take like 6 months off of work. And that's just not an option for so many of us. But I like to be honest about that because I never want to tell people like, yeah, if you take a week off, you can totally recover from burnout. And it's like,
yeah,
maybe, but 6 months would probably do the trick a lot better. But, okay. So your job, is it a job that you like enjoy, but it's burning you out, or is it something you kind of stuck in?
So in September is going to be 10 years, but like I was mostly like stable and like my job was okay, you know, paying ends meet and all that, you know, and then like I was in a relationship and like that ended, you know, COVID. So like I feel like, you know, my job kind of got like very demanding. It's very high demanding, physical, you know, active. I'm on my feet all day and things, I didn't really cope with the stress and all that. And then like I didn't really, my job's okay. I mean, it has pros, you know, cons, whatever, you know, but I got very cynical and like I got, cause I wasn't on meds. Like I'm on meds now for, you know, like for mood and for other stuff. But like before I was kind of have like a midlife crisis mental breakdown thing, like back in October. So I kind of like, now I'm in the boredness stage where it's like, I'm looking for jobs like left and right. But so where I'm like very bored and very like disengaged at work. So that's, and it's like, I can't wait till the day's over. Type of feeling now. So,
yeah, that ADHD boredom, it is not like non-ADHD boredom. It is a whole other beast. So,
yeah, like I never felt it like this before. Like all of a sudden, something like is something triggered, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm. And that can happen. That can absolutely happen where things just change. And I get the sense that there's part of you that's like, I just want to go back to the way it was before.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Absolutely. But I want to encourage you to like explore some of the ways you can move forward instead of moving back, instead of going back to the way things were. Like, what are some helpful and healthy ways that you could move forward now? So like, maybe this job was great. Like I was saying before about like ADHD coping mechanisms, like they only work for me for a couple of months and then I have to switch. So maybe your job was great for you for about 10 years and that's awesome. And maybe now it's just time to switch. And like you said, I know you're searching and that is a whole process, but
yeah, cause I'm going through this like unfulfillment, like identity, like thing going on, like, you know, like what's my purpose thing, like, you know, like thing going on too, you know? So.
Yeah. I think looking for a new job is a good start, but don't expect your new job when it does eventually come through to like ultimately fulfill you, because that fulfillment is going to come from community and connection. Which is hard for a lot of autistic people. So I empathize.
Cause like social is huge for me, you know, like especially, but I have a hard time reaching out, but where I'm just like mentally exhausted, where it's like anything like I got to put my brain to, like, I just kind of like don't bother because I have no energy to do that.
Well, okay. Then first and foremost, I want to commend you for showing up to this, because you were like, I just got off work, like I'm here. So I think that's a really great way to reach out for connection, even though it's online. Like, I still think that's really great. So good for you.
Thanks.
And I think the next thing you got to do is start getting to know yourself. Cause like you said, you're sort of going through this
crisis. That's a problem. I don't know who I am. That's a, like, I'm looking for that, you know, and like,
and so many,
like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so many people who experience borderline really have this very fractured sense of self, and this sense that like, I used to be defined by this person and now I'm defined by this person. And then this person left and now I'm just defined by all the people who don't love me. And like, that can be really heartbreaking and really hard. So I think a big part of borderline healing is recognizing that you don't have to uncover who you are. Like, there's no hidden gem inside you that is like who you are. Instead, you get to build it. You get to create it out of nothing, out of thin air, out of smoke and mirrors. You get to put together a human, and that might take some time. And that feels really hard because it's like everybody else just gets to be themselves and I have to put so much work into it. But like, we can do the work or we cannot. Those are kind of our options. And I think it's way better to do the work and to show up and create the person that you want to be.
Yeah. I measure like I'm trying to do lifestyle changes, like with definitely with diet, exercise and all that, but like, just, you know, like functioning daily life is just like hard in itself right now. So
yeah, I'm going to give you some of the same advice that I gave. It was Lydia, I think. I'm pretty sure it was Lydia, who had to pop off, but, you got to figure out which of the balls that you're juggling are glass and which ones are rubber, and you got to drop everything that's rubber and just do the bare minimum for a while. And that might make you feel worse at first, because you're like, I'm not even doing anything with my life, you know, but like, it's necessary to recover from burnout to do less
and
to do like maybe one thing a week that actually brings you not just a lack of frustration, but active joy, you know?
Yeah. So my work is like 90% of my energy, you know, that's the thing.
Exactly. You
know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of stuck in a hard, like, you know, a hard place. So.
Yeah. Cause how are you supposed to find a different job when you don't even have energy to search? Cause the job you're in.
Yeah. And then I want to like work out and do stuff like, but like sometimes like, you know, my energy is not even there to do, you know, what I want to do, you know, and that's the issue I'm dealing with, you know, too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand that. I think we have to figure out how, so if that 90% is non-negotiable, like you can't change how much energy your job eats up, which for some of us we can, some of us we can't. And it sounds like your job kind of is what it is. It eats up this much energy. There's nothing to be changed. Then what we have to do is really decide what we want to do with that 10% and make the most of it. But when I say that, I don't mean like spend it frenetically. I just mean like, maybe that 10% means you have to do some self-care, or maybe that 10% means you have to job search, or maybe that 10% means like, I just have to sleep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could get you to a job that was more fulfilling and ate up less of your energy, because I think that would make a big difference for you.
Oh yeah, that's why I'm like I've been like, you know, applying like crazy, because I love animals. Like I'm waiting for I applied for, you know, like when you're talking about like no experience, and that's what like holds me back about, because like I only have like, you know, warehouse experience, whatever. And so like holding me back is like, you know, I don't have like experience, you know, like, and that's like, you know, because I'm only a high school, you know, graduate. So like I wanted, you know, like try and make my money, but like you don't, you know, or like other skills, but I don't like have the skills, you know, so like to do anything else, you know, so. And that's the hard part.
Yeah, I think keep applying to jobs even if you don't meet all the requirements, because honestly, like I said, people don't expect you to, which is a weird thing that doesn't make sense to my autistic brain at all, but apparently they don't expect you to meet all the requirements anyway. So there's that. And then like I was telling Lydia, like reach out to the other people in your life and be like, hey, are you hiring? Hey, like, do you know of anyone who is hiring? Do you know of any like career coaching opportunities that like, I don't know, career coaching might eat up like your 10% of energy, and we don't necessarily want to do that. But yeah, just asking for connections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else I can do for you?
No, like, so if I take a week off to like relax, like, is there certain things I should do to like try and restore it a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Okay. So I think if you do end up taking the week off, what I would do is I would give each day off a theme. And you don't have to do that. That's just what I would do. Where one day might be totally dedicated to reaching out to people to get job connections. And one day might be completely dedicated to physical self-care. Like you said, you're in a very physically demanding job, like taking care of the body you're in, and whether that means going to get a massage or, I don't even know. I'm trying to think of like cheap ways to do this. Oh,
yeah. Massages. Yeah. Like that's like my go-to right there.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are like three ways to take care of your body as well. Like, bubble baths are always pleasant. Or just like a nice cold shower, hot shower, whatever feels best for you.
Yeah, because I can relax just fine. Like when I'm not at a job, like, you know, watching TV, movies, whatever, you know, video game, like I can, but it's just a matter of like, actually like, you know, fun, you know, like when I'm off work, like, oh, like it's a relief, you know, like, and then like, and I still got to make food and all that. But it's like, but when I'm like off, like, I'm just like, it's my brain's like just like, oh, thank goodness, you know, like it's like, you know, it's like gotten down, you know, off, it's like off the like all the stuff I got to put in, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think if you end up taking that week off, like I would be wary of watching TV or movies most of the time. Not that you can't do it, it's just that that's usually not the most restorative version of rest for most of us. It's more of a zoning out and a dissociation, which we are trying to get you to connect with yourself rather than distance.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I do that a lot. So yeah, so.
It's totally understandable. It's a great way to cope. And I don't want to take your coping mechanisms away. I just mean, if you're going to take this week off, really make it count. Really give yourself as much restoration as you can.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to pop over to Kyra, but I'm really glad that you hopped on.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Kyra. What's up?
Okay. Trying to figure out how to condense this into a few minutes. So I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety many years ago, and then ADHD more recently, but it was kind of weird because the person who was recently diagnosed me was kind of wishy-washy about it. Like, I mean, I came in saying, okay, I think maybe, I think maybe I have ADHD, and this is why I've never really gotten on top of the depression issues. And she was like, yeah, well, I guess, I mean, you fit the criteria, but it doesn't seem like a severe case, but, you know, okay. And then stimulant meds didn't do anything for me. So she started going, well, maybe it's not ADHD. I don't know. Maybe I should change my diagnosis. Maybe it's something else. I don't know. So that was all kind of destabilizing. So partly because stimulant meds didn't work, and because I was reading more about, you know, other types of neurodivergence and things that I was reading about people's experiences with autism also kind of rang through for me. I asked for a referral for a neuropsych evaluation and finally got that, and put off reading the results for a long time because I was nervous, but finally did look at it. And basically, the evaluation, of course, confirmed the depression and anxiety, confirmed the ADHD. So, like, that's cool that, you know, I have more confirmation that, yes, I'm not neurotypical, but no one, they said no on the autism, even though I've got symptoms. And various like social difficulties and things, I don't know. And I wrote back kind of going, well, okay, so you're kind of saying, yes, you have symptoms, but that just symptoms of autism, but they can all be explained away by social anxiety. And that doesn't really make sense to me, because here's some things that don't seem like they can be explained by social anxiety. And the doctor was like, well, you don't have the neurocognitive deficiencies associated with autism, even though there are symptoms, sure. So I don't know. So I'm just kind of like, okay, what do I do with, I'm not even sure what my question is exactly. It's just sort of a weird situation.
Yeah, that's very, very frustrating. Okay, so.
Like, I took a bunch of self-tests from the site Embrace Autism, and like emailed like 7 different self tests that all agree to I'm like autistic, and sent them back, and he's like, yeah, self tests are inflated. And I'm like, okay, don't even consider that then, cool, thanks.
Right, so yeah, that sounds like a pretty invalidating experience, and I'm sorry that
a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds not fun. So on like the practical level, I would make accommodations assuming that you are autistic. Not because I'm telling you you are, because I don't know that, but because if you show symptoms of autism, then there are ways to accommodate those symptoms, I suppose. Even if it's not like, even if you are, I don't know, subclinical. Yeah. You can still accommodate yourself. Like, no one's telling you you have to No one's telling you you have to be officially, or they shouldn't be telling you you have to be officially diagnosed in order to do anything to help yourself. That's nonsense. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example, but like noise canceling headphones in the grocery store, that no one can gatekeep that, you know, like you don't have to be autistic to get something from that. So on a practical level, I would just start accommodating yourself left, right, and center, any humanly possible way you can. If you feel silly, like DM me on Instagram and I'll remind you it's not silly. So that's the practical stuff. But I think the bigger thing, the thing that's really weighing on you, is more of the identity stuff, where it's like, where do I fit? Like, who am I? Why do I feel this way? And why is everyone so wishy-washy about it? Why can no one put me with my people? And I understand that. I was like that for years and years and years. I didn't know what was going on because I've been in therapy for over 10 years. I've had a bunch of misdiagnoses and nothing ever quite felt right until I found out I was autistic and ADHD. And the thing is, professional diagnosis is very valuable. I'm not here to say it doesn't matter or that you should discount the opinion of people who have like assessed you. But if they're going to immediately dismiss self-tests as being overinflated and not even worth looking at or considering, these don't sound like professionals who know that much about autism, unfortunately. And again, I'm not saying you should discount their opinion. I'm just saying yours matters too. You know yourself. And I know that's like really cliche, and a lot of autistic people are like, no, I fucking don't. That's the problem. But you know yourself. And I think if the accommodations help, and if you have symptoms or traits that are like subclinical or whatever, I can't speak for the entire autism community, but as an autistic person, I would be happy to welcome you as part of the community. You know, like I would think that's fine. I think there's a wide, it's a spectrum. And this idea of ranking people from severe, because, you know, you said your doctor said something about your ADHD not being that severe. Like this idea of severity is not completely useless, but it's frustrating because it's often used to dismiss people who are suffering internally. And I think that's probably the case for you. And yeah,
like, because I don't know, haven't gotten fired yet or something, but it must not be that bad.
Oh yeah, no, I know. It's yeah. I've had many, many different mental health professionals tell me some pretty crappy things along those lines. So I think when it comes to the identity, I want you to do, if you want to, obviously this isn't homework, but if you want, I recommend doing either journaling or like talking into your phone, whatever is easiest and has the least amount of friction for you. I just want you to do some like self-reflection on like not all the traits and symptoms and signs and deficits and all that, but just about like your likes and dislikes. What do I like? What do I dislike? When I did this exercise, it was so freaking hard. I had to start with food because I'm a picky eater, always have been. And like, that's something I know about myself to be true. But the rest of my identity, like what I liked and disliked, I didn't have a clue. So I recommend starting there, and it might be harder than you think. But start with your likes and dislikes, and then start moving into other aspects of your identity. And just remember that self-diagnosis is valid too. Even if professionals have gotten it wrong, it doesn't mean all the crappy things that the trolls on the internet say it means. You know, like there are crappy people who are like, oh, you're just shopping for a diagnosis, or you're just waiting till someone tells you what you want to hear or whatever. Like just because that's their opinion doesn't mean it's true. Sometimes we know something about ourselves and we're just looking for confirmation and people refuse to give it to us, and that hurts. But you don't need them. You're allowed to confirm yourself.
Thanks.
Yeah. Is there anything else I can help you with?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Good. Good. I'm really glad. Okay. Well, this has been amazing. I loved doing this. I'm probably going to start doing these more if I'm being honest, because I really love coaching. That's my job and I enjoy it very much. So I would love to see you all in the NeuroDivergent Magic program so we can do this coaching every single week. But if that is not an option for you right now, I do understand. Remember that I put the 10% code in there, community. And yeah, I would love to work with some of you guys, or all of you really, but I got to talk to some of you. Oh, Lori, thank you, Megan, for the advice. And thank you everyone who shared. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for sharing in the chat. Sorry, I wasn't keeping up with it, but, and thank you for everyone who came off mute and got brave. This is going to be on the podcast. And I think people are just going to get so much from listening to you all get coached. So yeah. Okay. I never know how to end these things. So I'm just going to skedaddle. You all are the best. Go out there, keep being you. Okay. Bye. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you give us a follow over on Spotify, leave a review over on Apple Podcasts, and tune in next Saturday for another amazing episode.